Welcome to the WCHL Community Forum, presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development and Durham Technical Community College. Our monthly forum features Chapelboro's elected officials and community leaders debating topics affecting our community and you. The discussion is sponsored by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Chapel Hill is open to business and for business. More at opentobusiness.biz and by Durham Technical Community College, Durham and Orange County campuses. Do great things. The WCHL Community Forum begins now.
Welcome into the August WCHL Community Forum here on 97.9 The Hill. I'm Blake Hodge, and we are talking about gerrymandering this month. We always try to bring you a timely topic during these monthly community forums, and I think it would be difficult to get to a more timely topic than gerrymandering as we are looking at new legislative district proposals that are not finalized as of this recording, but we'll continue to keep you updated on that here on 97.9 The Hill. Today, we have got Jane Pinsky from the North Carolina Coalition of Lobbying and Government Reform is joining us with Congressman David Price and Mitch Kokai from the John Locke Foundation. A lot of different perspectives here, but one of the areas where people from each side of the aisle and advocacy organizations have tended to agree that it's time to take a new look at how we draw legislative elected maps for North Carolina and across the country. So excited to have this conversation today. And Jane, I want to start with you and just tell us a little bit about what your organization does and how y'all have been working on redistricting in general.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for having us. And thanks for talking about this topic that I'm sure everybody agrees is one we need to resolve sooner rather than later. My organization is 12 years old and was founded when there were some ethical problems in North Carolina, most noticeably when former House Speaker Jim Black ended up going to jail. And we began by working on tightening ethics rules for the state. But our goal was to make government transparent, open, and accessible to citizens. And one of the things that we found was that a big roadblock to that was the way redistricting was done in North Carolina. So since our formation in 2005, redistricting has been an issue we've worked on since 2008. It's been our major issue, and it will continue to be until we get a change. I think the thing that's interesting about the coalition that I work with is that there are some very unlikely partners. The John Locke Foundation and Common Cause are part of the coalition, and they don't agree on a lot of things. League of Conservation Voters, AARP, they're groups that have other interests, but this is the one place where they agree that until we get redistricting right, we can't go on to get a lot of other things right.
We'll hop across the table to Mitch here and kind of do the same thing. Introduce yourself, and why is this such an important issue from the John Locke Foundation's perspective?
Sure. I'm the senior political analyst at the John Locke Foundation and spend much of my time monitoring what's going on with the General Assembly and with state government in general in North Carolina. One of the issues that the Locke Foundation has been pushing for decades now, probably shortly after the foundation started, was reforming the redistricting process, which is what leads to the gerrymandering term being thrown about. The push from the John Locke Foundation started back when Democrats were in control of our General Assembly and drew election maps to favor Democrats. And back at that point, it was probably not a shock to people that a group that's conservative and that seemed in many respects to be aligned a lot with issues that Republicans also pushed would be pushing for redistricting reform. But after Republicans won the legislative elections in 2010 and got control of the redistricting process, while a number of Republican elected officials and other Republicans looked at the redistricting process and said, we kind of like the way things work now that we're in charge, the Locke Foundation still said, and we still say, that the process needs to be reformed. It's one in which right now the people who stand to benefit most from the process directly in terms of keeping themselves in office are the ones who are drawing the maps, and it just doesn't make sense from a good government perspective. So we've continued to be vocal on the issue of seeing some sort of redistricting reform that takes the map drawing process out of the hands of the people who would stand to benefit from it, because as the saying goes, we want to see voters choosing their elected officials, not elected officials choosing their voters.
And Congressman Price, you've been elected a whole bunch of times based on your years in Congress, but a lot of different maps over that timing as well. So from the elected official perspective on this, what do you see whenever you see some of these new maps proposed and the different impacts those can have on North Carolinians?
You're right that I've been on the receiving end of this process a number of times, both with Democrats in charge and Republicans in charge in the General Assembly. And I never felt any particular control, often no influence over the process. This is something the legislature does, and members of the legislature from both parties, I'm afraid, pretty jealously guard their prerogatives in this regard, and they don't often have a whole lot of consultation with the members of Congress on either side. So we're the recipients of this district drawing, and I've usually had a pretty balanced district. Only since the 2010 election and the Republicans really taking this gerrymandering to a new partisan level. It's always been partisan, but what happened, I think we'd agree, after 2010 has unique features in terms of just the egregiousness of it, where an evenly balanced state basically now has 10 Republican and 3 Democratic members of Congress. I'm one of those 3. So in a sense, I'm a beneficiary personally because so many Democrats have been packed into my district. But the idea, of course, is to make all the surrounding districts Republican. So the map is a very gerrymandered map, and we play the hand we're dealt. I've had a lot of counties. I think, you know, maybe 9 or 10 counties in my district at one time or another. Now it happens to be a 3-county district and reasonably compact. I also should say that I have wanted to reform this process for a long time, and have currently a bill on the table in the House of Representatives to require every state to do this process through an independent commission, a nonpartisan commission.
It seems like one of the things we've heard talking about why this latest map was, to the extent that it was you know, technological advances and really being able to zero in on some of these things. Ellie Kinnaird, former Carrboro mayor and local representative at the state level, was always one of the Democrats who would sign on to the redistricting bills as they were being presented by Republicans in years past, and she has since left the General Assembly. But, Mitch, I want to turn back to you here to ask about having those leading Republicans, Phil Berger, Senate President Pro Tem, leading that effort whenever the Republicans were in the minority, and for him to now say that there's no appetite for that at the state legislative level, what do you make of that as a, you know, kind of a conservative pundit on this type of issue?
Well, I think you found that the legislature, the folks who are in charge, like to be in charge and like to continue to be in charge, and that has been true whoever has held the power. Back when the Democrats were in charge of the General Assembly, there were some elections in which you ended up with a very close split between Democrats and Republicans. And that's when people who wanted to reform this process basically were talking to the Democrats and saying, look, you know, this is very tight. You're ahead in the House 62-58, or you're ahead in the Senate 26-24. Can't you see a time when Republicans might win this election and they're going to do to you exactly what you did to them? Wouldn't you want to build in some sort of safeguard to prevent them from doing the same sort of thing with this gerrymandering that you did? And Democrats took that under advisement and didn't do anything about putting in a redistricting reform process. And unfortunately, once the Republicans won and had the memory of what the Democrats had done to them, instead of saying, let's build in some sort of safeguard that will prevent us from having these gerrymandered districts done to our disadvantage, once the Democrats win, the pendulum swings back. Instead, they said, no, we kind of like this power. Let's draw things the way that they did. And as has been alluded to, because of the technological changes and the ease with which you can split districts so that you can, you know, one side of the street's voting in one district, one side of the street's voting in the other district. It's easy based on the data to know, or at least to approximate very well how people are voting in elections, mm-hmm. not just party affiliation, which can be somewhat misleading since we have so many more unaffiliateds, and North Carolina has a history of a number of people who register Democrat and vote for Republican. But you can actually look at how they voted in elections and say, okay, this was a tight, very a tight partisan split race, mm-hmm. Hagan-Tillis, or you know, one of the Secretary of State's races or something like that. You could see how people voted and get a good sense of how these new districts would play out. That's one way in which gerrymandering has become much more efficient for the party that's exercising it. And it has been kind of sad to see that some of the people who were most vocal about this process early on when the Republicans were in the minority have changed their minds. You referenced Phil Berger, another person who's been at the forefront of saying, no, we shouldn't change the process, is David Lewis, who's a representative from Harnett County, who was a vocal advocate for redistricting reform when Republicans were in the minority. But now he's the chairman mm-hmm. of the House Redistricting Committee. And in fact, after one of Jane's news conferences, came out right afterward and said, yeah, we don't want to do this. We're not going to do it. It's not going to happen. So that has been kind of disappointing.
Well, Jane, let's turn to you. I mean, to have that advocacy work go in and then immediately, you know, you can quote public opinion polls and all these other things to say North Carolinians across the board want this. How does that feel to have that immediately rejected?
Well, it feels pretty frustrating, particularly since Representative Lewis was the prime sponsor of the bill, the only bill that's passed either house of the North Carolina General Assembly in 2011. When the Republicans took over, he looked at what had happened in the past and thought, we're going to do this a different way, passed the House, and the Senate shut it down. So it's very frustrating to know we were so close to making a change, particularly since if you get most Republican members, House or Senate, off the record, they understand that someday things are going to flip and they're going to be on the edge again. And they'd rather have the insurance policy that Mitch was talking about. And they know that their constituents wouldn't like that. All the polls say 80% of North Carolinians want a different way of doing this. They want to take the politics out. And I think they're very frustrated. And I think in their heart of hearts, even the Republican leadership knows that they're walking a fine line and that this is something that at some point is going to have to change, but they're going to run it as long as they can. And understandably, because the Democrats had several shots at it in the past.
Well, and Mitch, you mentioned some of the close splits there. But in Jane, and you're kind of looking back at the history of this, have we seen anything kind of swing to the extent that we're seeing it now?
In 1992, a good example would be that in the North Carolina Senate, 48% of North Carolinians voted for a Republican to have a seat in the North Carolina Senate, and the Republicans got 30% of the seats. So it was pretty far off then. That's the number that seems the most obvious to me. But clearly, any number of times, the people drawing the maps have figured out how to make their opponents win big in a very few number of seats and let them win by a much smaller margin in a much larger number of seats.
And I think it's important to note, though, that reformers aren't saying that every district has to be competitive. I mean, that would be just as artificial as what we have now. What we're saying is that districts should represent communities. There should be a community of interest. There should be a reasonable compactness, contiguity. Those tend to be the buzzwords. And then the chips fall, you know. And there is a certain concentration in urban areas of Democrats, and so there would be some heavily Democratic districts probably, and same's true in rural and small town areas for Republican. But if you just look at the artificial contrivance that these maps represent, you follow those basic principles of compactness, communities of interest, and you're going to have more competitive districts, and in a wave election, you're going to have more districts turning over. I just don't think there's any question about that. But all we have to go on right now in terms of judicial standards is that you can't use race. Mm-hmm. You can't use race as the primary factor in districting. So there is a court decision pending right now. It's called Gill versus Whitford. It's a Wisconsin case. And that's really the alternative path forward to what we're talking about here today. Mm-hmm. Ideally, North Carolina and other states would adopt nonpartisan redistricting. But if this court decision goes the right way, then it won't just be race that the courts will look at. They will look at things like bizarre violations of communities of interest or of compactness. And that will be grounds for requiring legislatures to redo the districts. So I don't know what the odds are of that. It seems to all depend, as much does, on Justice Kennedy and what he decides. But that Wisconsin case has been accepted for hearing, so it would be a major game changer if that was to go the right way before the next census.
Well, we have got a lot more to get to on this topic, but we do need to squeeze a break in here. This is the WCHL Community Forum for the month of August, brought to you by Durham Tech and Chapel Hill Economic Development, and a lot more to get to talking about gerrymandering here on 97.9 The Hill.
$500 scholarships are now available at Durham Tech for any Chapel Hill, Carrboro, or Orange County High School resident who graduated from their local high school in the past year. Students enrolled in at least 6 hours of curriculum programs at Durham Tech can access up to $2,000 over 2 years, then transfer to a four-year institution without college debt. Public school students are eligible, so go to durhamtech.edu and type Connect Funds into the search box. Get ready to do great things.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to the arts.
Chapel Hill is open to diversity.
To education.
To collaboration.
To transit.
To foodies.
To innovation.
To progress.
To the environment.
To light rail.
To craft brews.
To affordable housing.
To city parks.
To kids.
To connectivity.
To business.
To culture.
To green.
To smart growth.
Chapel Hill is open to family.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to you.
For more information, visit open2.biz.
Welcome back to the WCHL Community Forum, brought to you by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Chapel Hill is open to education, arts, and culture, and exploring the natural world. We're a diverse place that appreciates our past and looks forward to our future. More at opentobusiness.biz. And by Durham Tech. With many green building features, the state-of-the-art 20-acre Orange County campus of Durham Tech helps Orange County residents do great things as they pursue their education, workforce training, and lifelong learning. Now, back to the WCHL Community Forum.
Welcome back into the WCHL Community Forum. You're on 97.9 The Hill, talking about gerrymandering and balancing out U.S. elections. And, you know, it's amazing to hear some of the stats about percentages of North Carolinians voting for one party versus how many seats that ends up electing them. And Congressman Price, I wanted to bring you into this as part one of those three Democrats representing North Carolina in the House of Representatives. What type of impact have you seen at the federal level dealing with other members of Congress whenever we've seen these types of gerrymandering? I mean, we've referenced five or six states, it feels like, that are going through similar things. Has this kind of split the divide further in your discussions at the federal level?
Yes, it has. The first thing to say, though, I suppose, is that North Carolina is not the only state where this has gone on. Mm-hmm. Jane mentioned Maryland. Illinois probably is another case of Democrats taking hold of this process. But by and large, it's been Republicans in state after state who have done this, and they did it after a very bad year for us to have a bad year, namely 2010, the Tea Party election, the blowback from the Obama election of 08, 2010, monumental change, which affected many states and, of course, set up the redistricting for the next decade. So if you look at a whole string of states, Virginia, Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, I'm missing one or two. Anyway, it's a string of states. Six, eight states that are just egregious, like North Carolina is. And if it weren't for that, Democrats would be much closer to control of the U.S. House of Representatives than we are today. The estimate that I've heard in percentage terms is that because of gerrymandering, it's not just gerrymandering. There is some question of where populations are concentrated, which confounds this a bit. But gerrymandering is the major factor. We would have to win we'd have to win the generic popular vote for Congress by 7 points in order to break even in the number of seats. I mean, that's how far off kilter this is. Now, you're asking about not just Republican control, but the quality of Republican control. And there, too, I think the impact is great. And I think actually some Republicans are beginning to ask themselves about this, because these safe seats lead to a kind of political rigidity that has a lot to do with the current Republican failure to govern and the difficulty they have, the leadership of the party, the difficulty they have bringing in this Tea Party faction. Very conservative members in very insulated districts. How to bring them around and how to make them take a broader view. And I must say, it's not just the 40 Tea Party members. It's also a lot more than that who are leveraged by the Tea Party. In other words, they're fearful that if they become perceived as moderates, that they're going to have a primary challenge from the Tea Party wing of the party or the Trump loyalists or whatever it happens to be. It's a situation that means that many, many members, Republicans especially, some of this on the Democratic side, they're a lot more worried about their own party and who might challenge them in the primary than they are about what the other party might do to them in a general election. And I'd say that's not healthy. You know, it's not healthy in a two-party system for there to be this pressure toward the extremes, because it does push toward the extremes, and then it makes the kind of compromise that in a checked and balanced constitutional system like we have, you've got to, in the end of the day, have some kind of compromise or your government's going to shut down.
Mitch?
I think it's also important to note, we've alluded to this earlier, but because of the way Republicans drew the congressional districts this past time around, the 10 seats that the Republicans hold, some of them are pretty safe. Some of them are somewhat safe, but a really strong Democratic candidate who's well-funded, well-liked, could knock one of them off. They've designed the Democratic districts, even after the districts were redrawn in 2016, basically so that no Republican could pretty much ever win any of these seats. That was by design. They really are not trying to compete for those seats. So it's interesting to hear someone who is, you could put it in scare quotes, the beneficiary of this, also speaking out against the process, because really, as long as Congressman Price wants to have that seat, he's not going to have any problem from Republicans. They've basically written off that district, the first district, and the 12th district, saying, we're going to win the other 10. Mm-hmm. We'll leave those to the Democrats. And so, as he said, when you have these safe districts, it makes it much less necessary to have to reach across the aisle. Now, Congressman Price has a long history on Capitol Hill and has reached across the aisle on occasion to get things done, so he knows how to do that. But if you're a new member, you're elected in a district where you know you're going to win your party, you're going to win in the general election, why would you have any incentive to want to work across the aisle? Right now, there are more Republicans in that boat than Democrats, but there are some Democrats in these very safe districts who have that same sort of situation.
And you said earlier, Mitch said earlier, that the Republicans are looking for a kind of sweet spot. They want safe districts, but they also want to have the maximum number of districts. So while they may give Democrats 75% districts, they're going to give their guys maybe 60% districts. And most of the time, that's good enough. But as the decade wears on, doesn't always stay the same. And so Democrats, in at least one of those districts, and maybe more, we're gonna have a very, very strong contender. And we may win the districts. But we may win some of these districts. But, boy, when the barricades are this high, it has to be quite a wave to wash over them.
Jane?
I think we should look, too, at the real numbers of districts that are competitive. Of the 435 people in the U.S. House, the estimates are that someplace between 12 and 35 of those districts are competitive. And that's defining competitive as 10 points or less. So that's a really small percentage of the people in Congress who have any reason to talk to people outside of their narrow political ideology. We watched Mark Meadows, who's a congressman from North Carolina, have an unusual weight in the healthcare debate because he's from a district that's always going to elect him, and he can bring the rest of the Freedom Caucus along. As long as you have that, you're putting roadblocks up to a government that is ready to work together and to come up with practical solutions. If your goal is to get reelected by people you know want X, Y, or Z, then that's what you're going to continue to do. And you're not going to talk to your constituents, and you're not going to have town hall meetings, and you're not going to be willing to talk to your colleagues. And that brings us to a point where we may grind to a halt.
We've got a couple of North Carolina marks that make the headlines a lot with Meadows and Walker, both leading different factions there that have some overlapping values as well. But at the state level, Mitch, from a policy standpoint, what do you think the type of maps that we've been voting under that have been ruled unconstitutional? I mean, they've had several legislative cycles here. What do you think it's done to the policy in North Carolina that we're now governed by?
I'm not sure about the overall impact on the policy. I think one thing that has happened is among the critics of our General Assembly, led by Republicans, it's given them a way to say, look, what you're doing is illegitimate because of the maps that you've used. Now, we ought to step back and remember that Republicans first won their supermajority in the state Senate under Democratic maps. And the House came very close to supermajorities. It was after they drew their own maps that they bumped it up from 68 members, which was four seats short of a supermajority, to well over the 72 that they needed. So having their own maps got them to the supermajority. But it was that Tea Party wave election of 2010 that gave Republicans control of the General Assembly. And in that first election, when they had their own maps, the voters of North Carolina also put in a Republican governor. So from 2013 to 2016, it's likely that most of those things that they passed would have got passed anyway, would have gone through, because the governor rarely vetoed what the General Assembly came up with. But you do have, because these maps have been declared unconstitutional, there is an argument from the critics of the General Assembly that, hey, what you've been doing, and they sort of vary what timeline they use. Sometimes they'll go back to 2011, which is not a very legitimate argument. But if they say since 2013, some of the things that you've been passing have been illegitimate or outside of the bounds of what people who make up a majority of North Carolinians want, there is an argument to be made there. I mean, Republicans can make a counter-argument. It's along the lines of what I mentioned with having a Republican governor, and they had already had large majorities. But it does cause some suspicion about what your General Assembly is up to when you know that the people who drew the districts are the people who are benefiting now from those districts. If they had won those same majorities under fair maps that were drawn in a nonpartisan process, there would still be criticism of what they did, but it wouldn't be based on the fact that they had these districts that they drew to their benefit. People would have to say, we don't like what you did. We think it's wrong for North Carolina, but we at least admit that your districts were fair and that you got elected fairly. As it stands now, they not only are critics of the policies, but also are critics of the way Republicans went about getting their seats.
Well, we have got a lot to still get into here. We do need to take another break. I want to talk, whenever we come back, about other options that we've seen other states implement. The We the People Act of 2017, Congressman Price referenced earlier that he has introduced in the United States House of Representatives. So we'll talk through some of those whenever we come back here on 97.9 The Hill, the WCHL Community Forum, talking gerrymandering and balancing out elections across North Carolina. and the United States.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to the arts.
Chapel Hill is open to diversity.
To education.
To collaboration. To transit. To foodies.
To innovation. To progress.
To the environment.
To light rail.
To craft brews.
To affordable housing.
To city parks.
To kids.
To connectivity.
To business.
To culture.
To green.
To smart growth.
Chapel Hill is open to family.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to you.
For more information, visit open2.biz.
$500 scholarships are now available at Durham Tech for any Chapel Hill, Carrboro, or Orange County high school resident who graduated from their local high school in the past year. Students enrolled in at least 6 hours of curriculum programs at Durham Tech can access up to $2,000 over 2 years, then transfer to a four-year institution without college debt. Public school students are eligible, so go to durhamtech.edu and type Connect Funds into the search box. Get ready to do great things.
Welcome back to the WCHL Community Forum, brought to you by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Chapel Hill is open to education, arts, and culture, and exploring the natural world. We're a diverse place that appreciates our past and looks forward to our future. More at opentobusiness.biz. And by Durham Tech. With many green building features, the state-of-the-art 20-acre Orange County campus of Durham Tech helps Orange County residents do great things as they pursue their education, workforce training, and lifelong learning. Now, back to the WCHL Community Forum.
Welcome back into the WCHL Community Forum here on 97.9 The Hill. I'm Blake Hodge. We've got Congressman David Price from North Carolina's 4th District, Jane Penske from the North Carolina Coalition of Lobbying and Government Reform, and Mitch Kokai from the John Locke Foundation with us today. And I want to reference something, Congressman Price, that you mentioned earlier, the We the People Act of 2017, I believe, is the title there that you have introduced. Can you just tell us what that entails and what you're hoping to accomplish with that?
It's a comprehensive reform bill, which Tom Udall is introducing in the Senate, and I have the bill in the House that I've introduced before, but this is pulling together in a more comprehensive way a number of reform proposals, including enhanced disclosure for who's paying for these ads, especially when they're being paid for by independent groups who we have no idea who's behind them. We are intending to, I did the stand by your ad provisions years ago where a candidate has to take responsibility for his or her own ad on the air. We're saying, well, super PACs should do the same thing. Let us know who's paying the freight on these things. We have matching federal funding for small contributions for presidential, reinstating the public funding for presidential races and congressional races. There's a whole list of proposals here. Pertinent to this discussion today, though, is the redistricting commissions, where we're requiring that states set up state by state. It would still be a state-based process, but states would be required to set up nonpartisan commissions to draw the districts, and then the legislatures would have to deal with that. And if they didn't pass the proposal of the nonpartisan commission, then it would land in the courts. So it's a modification of the present system, but designed basically to take this independent authority from legislatures and say it's got to be delegated to a nonpartisan commission. This is modeled on a number of states who have done this successfully: Iowa, New Jersey, Arizona, California. You know, California is an interesting case. For years, they had this ultimate mutual back-scratching kind of districting, and it wasn't just the majority party. Republicans, too. I mean, and they kept, it was incredibly stable. You know, you could have a whole new census in California, and yet your congressional delegation would be basically unchanged. It was the ultimate incumbent protection racket. Mm-hmm. And when this was proposed, it was on a referendum out there. I know. I don't know if they still admit it, but the leaders of my party were pretty negative about it, as well as the leaders of the Republican Party. But lo and behold, when you got a nonpartisan map drawn, Democrats were the big winners, picked up 5 or 6 seats. So they don't talk much about it anymore. But that's the way it went, and you don't know how it's going to fall out. But the situation in California, a lot of individual members have to work a lot harder to get reelected. Mm-hmm. Fair enough, right? I mean, they don't have safe seats anymore. On the other hand, as from the Democratic point of view, this has turned out to be a more Democratic delegation. But with the with the difference of being fairly elected in districts that really aren't tilted one way or the other.
Jane, you gave a thumbs up when he mentioned the enhanced disclosure. So what was driving that?
Well, as I said, the coalition is interested in making government as open, as accessible as possible to people. So knowing who's putting money into a campaign is important. You know, it's, again, one of the places where Common Cause and the John Locke Foundation agree on is, you know, if people are going to put money in, you need to know who's doing it. And so I think that's important. I think one of the things I do have to say about California is that at the same time they did redistricting reform, they also added something called top two primary, which means that the top two candidates, regardless of party, go on to the general election. And that makes things more competitive. People have to work harder. It mitigates against the extremes of a party. That is not an issue that we're going to take on right now, but we think that, you know, things that make races more competitive are important, and that includes taking out the incumbency protection. I think it was three or four times that California, every incumbent was guaranteed that if they wanted to run for their seat again, they could. And that's just not fair.
I don't know why this jumped in my head, but whenever you're talking about making it harder to get elected and win an election, which, you know, certainly sounds like we're moving toward a more competitive thought process, is there any concern that that's going to take away from the attention that's being paid to the actual work that they're doing at the time?
Well, I think you're right to bring this up. If you ask some of those California members that I referred to, people who used to have safe districts who now have competitive districts, they'd say, yeah, it has changed my life a lot. I'm on the phone dialing for dollars, hours every week. And so that raises other questions about the system and about the way people get elected and stay elected. And I acknowledge very readily that's a problem. That's a challenge. And political competition is a good thing, but it's not the only good thing. And we just as gerrymandering reform would be a good thing, but it's not the only reform we need.
Whenever we're looking at a North Carolina specific policy that would establish a redistricting commission, is there kind of agreement other than establishing one between some of the advocacy organizations about what that might look like, Mitch?
Jane will fill in some details on what the particular legislation would do, because much of what has been talked about when you're going beyond just the ideas and actually putting something on paper has been mirroring what Iowa has done, and she'll get into the details on that. But from our perspective at the Locke Foundation, it's been less important who draws the maps other than taking it out of the hands of the legislators themselves. And what's been more important is making sure you have good hard and fast rules that limit the amount of mischief that whoever the map makers are can do. One of those is taking away the incumbency protection. I mean, you want to have the contiguous districts. You want them to be compact. Those I think pretty much everyone agrees on. But some of the other things are not taking any account of where incumbents live, not taking into account the way that people have voted in past elections. Right now, when you're looking at these districts that have just come out from the legislative proposals, some of the things that that you could see are how people voted in the last Secretary of State's race or in the last Senate race. And you say, oh, it gives 52-46 for this party. You want to take that out. I mean, you basically want to say, all right, here's North Carolina. It's not a perfectly shaped system where you can easily just slice and dice in 13 pie slices and 50 pie slices and 120 pie slices. But knowing the limitations that are put there by the county boundaries and by the fact that we have this kind of oblong-shaped state that has some quirky characteristics to it, otherwise, trying to make the districts as compact as possible. Don't pay any attention to who lives where. Try to keep communities of interest together. If there are particular counties that have historically worked together, try to keep those together. If there are particular, if you have to split up a county, try to keep the particular cities that have had communities of interest together. Put those sorts of rules in place and then let the chips fall where they may. And my guess is based on the maps that were put together by Common Cause and some Duke University and some retired justices and judges mm-hmm. from the North Carolina courts, what you'd end up with in North Carolina, if those were the maps that we used, is you'd have six districts that under normal circumstances would be likely to elect Republicans, four that would be likely to elect Democrats, and three that would be toss-ups. So under normal circumstances, it could be anywhere from 7-6 Democrat to 9-4 Republican. Mm-hmm. And then in a wave year, you could pick off even more on one side or the other. But that would be the way to go, making sure you have good rules that limit whoever's drawing the districts and what they do. And I'd like to turn it over to Jane to tell you what Iowa does.
I do think it's interesting you mentioned where incumbents live, because wasn't the congressional map shifted after it was initially put out because one of the incumbents didn't actually live in the district? It was just a little carving out.
Yeah. The George Holding was just inside, I think, the fourth, wasn't he?
Still is.
He is.
Yeah,
and we, kind of fudged
it. But congressional members of the U.S. House don't have to live in their districts, right, unlike the rules for the General Assembly. Mm-hmm.
But I think it's important to say, until now, we've never had any rules, or the rules are whatever you're going to do, just don't get caught doing it. And the courts have caught us doing it since the 1980s and 90s. But having strict criteria is the key factor. Iowa does it by having professional staff, three members of their legislative services staff, draw the maps. And then there is a citizens advisory commission that gets citizen input. Then the maps are redrawn. Then it goes to the legislature. The key part there is that the legislature votes it up or down. And they can not amend except on technical grounds. And those technical grounds are to agree to the rules, that the districts are compact, contiguous, follow state and federal law, which in North Carolina would largely be the Voting Rights Act and whole counties, and that you don't look at political factors. If you look at the maps that came out this weekend, every incumbent's got their name neatly dotted on there so you know where they live. And you can see that they've drawn those districts to just include somebody or just exclude somebody. The other important things are about Iowa is that if the legislature votes down the maps, they have to publicly say, we voted down the maps because they don't fulfill this part of a rule. They can't do it because they don't like somebody, or because somebody's cousin isn't going to be in the district the way it's drawn. And they can't draw maps that would include something like Congressman Price's district, where he could only get to part of his district by driving around a long way or swimming the Cape Fear River, which is just really not contiguous. And then they must explain why they don't approve it. And the staff redraws it, and it comes back. The other thing about the Iowa system is that it has a timetable. And the staff has 6 weeks from the time they get the census data to finish the maps. There is a limited amount of time for public hearings, a limited amount of time for the legislature to look at it, a limited amount of time for them to explain why they didn't approve it if they don't, and a limited amount of time for their governor to sign it. Now, our governor has nothing to do with redistricting. Because when the Democrats were in charge, they were afraid that we might have another Republican governor and he would veto a Democratic plan. But one of the things that you have rules and you have a timetable. And an important part of the timetable is that it takes redistricting out of becoming a political football.
One wrinkle that needs to be mentioned, I guess, that distinguishes North Carolina from Iowa, and that is our large African-American population.
Right.
There is a sweet spot to be struck there when it comes to the practices of decades past, where the way districts were drawn denied racial minorities, denied Hispanics in many cases, the ability to elect representatives from their community.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, the Republicans have taken that and run with it now and packed every African-American inside into a few districts, and that's, of course, what the courts have just told them they can't do. On the other hand, there are legitimate communities of interest that aren't purely geographical. And so there's going to continue to be a need for statecraft, for responsible behavior by whoever's drawing districts, and also scrutiny by the courts that will do justice to questions of racial representation as well as other kinds of representation.
Well, we have got to take our last break here, come back and talk a little bit more about that, what this new process could do to kind of restore some of that trust in public government or from the public in its government. Here on 97.9 The Hill, the WCHL Community Forum for the month of August, focusing on gerrymandering.
$500 scholarships are now available at Durham Tech for any Chapel Hill, Carrboro, or Orange County High School resident who graduated from their local high school in the past year. Students enrolled in at least 6 hours of curriculum programs at Durham Tech can access up to $2,000 over 2 years, then transfer to a four-year institution without college debt. Public school students are eligible, so go to durhamtech.edu and type Connect Funds into the search box. Get ready to do great things.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to the arts.
Chapel Hill is open to diversity.
To education.
To collaboration. To transit. To foodies.
To innovation. To progress.
To the environment.
To light rail.
To craft brews.
To affordable housing.
To city parks.
To kids.
To connectivity.
To business.
To culture.
To green.
To smart growth.
Chapel Hill is open to family.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to you.
For more information, visit open2.biz.
Welcome back to the WCHL Community Forum, brought to you by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Chapel Hill is open to education, arts, and culture, and exploring the natural world. We're a diverse place that appreciates our past and looks forward to our future. More at opentobusiness.biz. And by Durham Tech. With many green building features, the state-of-the-art 20-acre Orange County campus of Durham Tech helps Orange County residents do great things as they pursue their education, workforce training, and lifelong learning. Now, back to the WCHL Community Forum.
Welcome back into the final segment of the WCHL Community Forum for the month of August, talking about gerrymandering. You know, we've talked about some of the different options that could be out there. And one of the issues that we've heard a lot recently is a lack of trust in government as a whole, not feeling like the voice of residents is being heard. So we'll go directly to our elected official in the room here in Congressman Price. What would, if something like the We the People Act of 2017 got passed and signed and you move forward with that, what would that do to restore some of that public trust in your mind?
I believe it would have a major impact on the legitimacy of our government, or the way people see government. It's not the only thing. You know, people still need to behave responsibly as representatives. And I'm not saying people don't. I mean, there are some people who are in perfectly safe districts who still think it is their responsibility as a representative to listen to everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like the electoral system determines everything. But the electoral system does, that's the playing field. And so if people are elected with huge independent, unaccountable independent expenditures flooding into the system, or if people are elected by distorted maps that give them unfair advantage. All of these things do have an effect on how citizens view their own voice and whether they have any say, and also their evaluation of people who represent them. I tell you, when you are in a town meeting like I am quite often, and you bring up these issues, there's nothing that people, the nodding in the room, the heads nodding in the room, are the greatest on this set of issues than anything you bring up. The frustrating thing is that not that many people seem to vote on these issues. That's a real challenge. It's a challenge for organizations like Jane's who try to raise public awareness. I'm trying, and we all need to try to raise the profile here, to really make these features of what we're trying to do as elected officials, that the rules of the game matter, the perception that the system is rigged matters. And we have some responsibility, not just in the way we conduct ourselves, but in the kind of rules we're operating under, to make certain people feel like their voice is heard and they're being fairly treated.
Mitch, we'll go to you as we're getting close to wrapping up here. I mean, you've mentioned the legitimacy of things several times, and what not having that as an option of attack could do. So in your opinion, kind of the same thing, what would this do to enhance the legitimacy there?
Yeah, it certainly would. I mean, I think the Republicans in the General Assembly would argue that everything that they have done is legitimate, that they've been elected under maps that they were perfectly entitled to put together. But I think a lot of people, and not just among those who would already be critics of theirs, I mean, those, they're going to complain about the Republicans' policies anyway, but even among some of those who would support Republican policies or at least be inclined to support them, say, wait a minute, you know, this whole process is crazy. It was bad when Democrats did what they did to you. It's bad what you're doing to Democrats, and even more importantly, what you're doing to voters. Because it's not really important whether the Republicans are in control or the Democrats are in control, but who the voters want to be in control is in control, so that ultimately the voters remain in control. That's why we need a process that's better than what we have now.
Final word goes to Jane.
Well, I'm going to close with a story Mitch has heard me tell before, which is that my paternal grandfather came from Russia, having snuck out of Siberia, to be honest, for doing some things that the Tsar didn't like. And he came to the United States and made it clear to his children and his grandchildren that he came to have a voice in the government. And I feel like the kind of voice he thought we should have is being undermined. And I don't think it's just people on the left who feel that. I think what's happened with the Tea Party movement is a sign of people who feel disconnected from government. The people who elected Donald Trump feel like government isn't listening to them. And it scares me if citizens don't think that their voice and their vote is important. So I think everything we can do to make government responsive to citizens is important. And you know, my reason for doing this is this heritage that I was lucky enough to get. I know each of us had family that came from someplace else at some point, and we kind of owe them a responsibility.
Mitch Kokai from the John Locke Foundation, Jane Pinsky, the North Carolina Coalition of Lobbying and Government Reform, and Congressman David Price talking about gerrymandering here on the WCHL Community Forum for 97.9 The Hill. And you can hear a playback of this over at chapelboro.com if you missed part of this conversation. Thank you all for joining us. And this has been the Community Forum on 97.9 The Hill.
This month's WCHL Community Forum was presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Its mission is to support opportunities to put Chapel Hill's people to work and create economic prosperity for all, now and in the future. More at opentobusiness.biz. And by Durham Tech. $500 scholarships are now available at Durham Tech for any Chapel Hill, Carrboro, or Orange County High School resident who graduated from their local high school in the past year. So go to durhamtech.edu and type Connect Funds into the search box and get ready to do great things.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to the arts.
Chapel Hill is open to diversity.
To education.
To collaboration. To transit. To foodies.
To innovation. To progress.
To the environment.
To light rail.
To craft brews.
To affordable housing.
To city parks.
To kids.
To connectivity.
To business.
To culture.
To green.
To smart growth.
Chapel Hill is open to family.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to you.
For more information, visit opentoo.biz.
$500 scholarships are now available at Durham Tech for any Chapel Hill, Carrboro, or Orange County High School resident who graduated from their local high school in the past year. Students enrolled in at least 6 hours of curriculum programs at Durham Tech can access up to $2,000 over 2 years, then transfer to a four-year institution without college debt. Public school students are eligible, so go to durhamtech.edu and type Connect Funds into the search box. Get ready to do great things.